Okay, I guess we'll begin now. Sorry to interrupt you. So, next week is our last session. So if you have been coming to all the sessions, if you'll hand in your completion card next week, and it would be really helpful for me if you've been through all the sessions, you've done all the meditation practices, and you expect to have a certificate to print your name on the sign-up sheet and circle it, so then I can, start filling out the certificate, so won't take too much time next week. So for the opening exercise, let's get into our meditation posture on our concentration cushion. Sit comfortably. If you're sitting on a cushion, you have your legs crossed. If you're sitting on a chair, you have your feet flat on the floor or on a cushion. Your back is straight. Your shoulders are level. Your arms are away from your torso. Hands either right on left with thumbs touching or on your knees. Comfortably on your lap or your knees. Your head is tilted slightly forward. Your jaws and your neck and the shoulders are not tense, they're relaxed. You put your tongue on the top of your palate. And then bring your focus to your breath. Going in and out. The air going in and out of your nostrils. Or your abdomen rising and falling. If you have difficulty focusing, you can think in your mind out as you exhale. In as you inhale. And try to remember to set your motivation for being here today. And I'll sound the bell once to begin and once to end. Okay, would anyone like to share their experience of their meditation practice the past few days? No. Did anyone choose a meditation object? He did? Okay, great. That's okay, you just don't have to tell. So, last week we talked about obstacles, and the two main ones are laxity and excitement, and what their antidotes are. And so we used mindfulness to refocus our attention back to the object over and over again, like a rope. And the object would be like the hitching post, and the elephant is our mind. And so we keep doing that over and over again. And vigilance is a type of awareness. I don't know if I mentioned that last week, but it's checked to see if the mind is excited or dull. So its function is to check on the quality of your awareness and the extremes of laxity and excitement. And so how does it do that? You know, well, that's what one of the qualities of our mind is that it perceives what the mind is doing. So it's like a mental spy. And you would know that. You know, you know you can do notice what you're doing and how you're doing and throughout the day. So then there's different parts of a meditation session. First you calm your mind, then you sit your motivation, then you do the actual meditation practice, and then you dedicate. So now what I like to do is do that mindfulness of eating practice again, and we don't have quite as many people, so maybe this won't take as long. Now I didn't just for the interest of time, I just had it set up by the sign-up sheet. But this time, since we don't have as many, what I'd like you to do is, you know, just get up from your seat and then just mindfully walk. You don't have to do all get up quite yet, but you just walk mindfully, you know, noticing how your feet touches the floor, you know, and don't just jump up and go there, but just walk mindfully, you know, like left, right, and then I'm going to face you, pretend that this is the food, and then we're going to put our hands together, bow to the food, and then take whatever it is. You can take a napkin and put it on there, and then go back to your seat and sit down. So we also, when we go back, we walk very mindfully. And then we wait for everyone to finish, you know, getting their food and sitting down. And then we can start eating very mindfully as we did last week. And you all know how to do that, you know, trying to remember who was involved in getting the food, growing the food, you know, getting all this processed and brought together for us, you know, at the grocery store. So if you could just go like row by row and get up and then come up and get something. Please, you can start right here. Yeah. Just please go ahead. And then you can just continue on and everyone can keep going. You just put your hands together and bow. And we're doing that not because the fruit and the cookies are holy, but it's just as a part of a mindfulness practice. You know, we know what we're doing. We're aware of what we're doing. We're aware in the present moment. And it's wonderful that you're observing noble silence. That's not really saying anything. And if you do, you can whisper, you know, quietly, just speak. And this time, you can take more than one thing. I'm sorry I didn't tell the others. You know, before it was, I didn't want you to take too many things because I wanted to really savor that one item. But this time, you know, if you're hungry, you can get more. I think we have enough food. And while you're waiting, you might think about, you know, what we talked about last week, about what it took for us to have this tangerine or this cookie here with us. You know, all that had to go together to grow that fruit. The years and years that the farmer had to cultivate that tree before it got to be that size that it could be actually picked from the tree and be able to be sold. People he hired to pick those tangerines from a tree, the water, the rain that we needed. You know, there was no drought probably, so it was able to grow, the sun, the fertilizer. And then the cookie, there's so many different things in it. These are not organic cookies. So we had many things in there, and, you know, the flour, I think they're nuts and they're pecans. So a great variety of things were in there. And then the people had to manage the machines for the dough, and then it had to be baked in the oven, and then it had to be cooled and then put into these packages, labeled, and then it had to be trucked over to this main warehouse and then distributed. And then at the grocery store, it had to be put into their database, and the barcode had to be scanned. We have to thank many people for bringing all these things to us. We're so interconnected with so many people in our society. All these people had to come together to do this for us. So many children and people are going to bed hungry tonight. Today, we get food. We get to eat something, so it's very precious. And here by waiting for everyone to finish, we are, you know, a community, a mindfulness community of meditators. So here we wait for everyone because we care for one another, for our interests, because we're going to be together and we're going to eat this together as one. Okay, thank you for waiting. You can please eat your snack. Did anyone practice mindful eating at home? Great. Wonderful. Even if you would just think about it while you're eating, you know, it's a good practice. I know some of you haven't finished it, but I'm just going to continue to talk about motivation and dedication. So why is it so important to motivate, to set an intention, to motivate, to dedicate? Well, one of the main reasons, and it's not, wasn't covered in this material, is that we rarely do virtuous actions well. We do negative actions completely. For example, we might have a motivation to kill a mosquito. You know, first of all, you hear it, and you can hear it, and you think, oh no, there's a mosquito here, I want to kill it. And then you see it, and it's on your arm, and then you say, I'm going to kill that mosquito. You swat it, you kill it, and then you say, I'm glad it's dead. You know, that's motivation, the action, and the dedication. That's a complete action. That causes a complete karmic seed. When we do virtuous actions, oftentimes we don't have a motivation or dedication. We might just do something. We might just, for example, you might give a gift, doing water bowls. We do water bowls in front of statues, holy images, and it's a very wonderful practice. You get a lot of merit. But if all you do is just go boom, 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 and put water in there, and then that's it, walk away, that's not really a complete virtuous action. You might have motivation. For example, you might have a motivation that, you know, you're doing this practice of filling the water bowls in order to benefit all sentient beings. And this, I'm going to do this practice and visualize that I'm doing this for all Buddhas and Bodhisattvas in the three times in 10 directions. And so that I may liberate all sentient beings. That's a very, you know, elaborate one, but just this is just an example. And then you do the actual practice, and then you dedicate at the end, you know, by this doing this virtuous action, may I, you know, bring all sentient beings to liberation, anything like that. And so usually we don't do that. We usually make a meal for your children there, you know, and that's it. But in your mind, you're not saying the whole thing. You know, you're doing this to so that your child will grow up to be healthy, you know, have a healthy body, do well in school and so forth. She's eating it, you know, and then may she, you know, may this food nourish her, you know, and so forth. And so that would be a complete virtuous action, you know, when you are feeding your child or anyone else. So we rarely do that. We're very much on, you know, automatic. So that's one of the big reasons why motivation and dedication is an important part of the meditation practice. But it's important for everything, all your practices, all the things that you do, basically. That's the first step. And that's to create the momentum of your whatever your intention is to carry through the course of your practice all the way to the end. And the most virtuous motivation is to do it to dispel the suffering and for the happiness of all beings. So the best time to do a motivation is to do it as soon as you wake up in the morning. You set a very nice motivation. It could just be for yourself. You know, may I have a healthy life with, you know, free from injury, whatever, am I get all my goals done and so forth. And and so I could benefit my family, you know, or so I could be a better person, so I could be a better worker, co-worker, family member, member of society, whatever. And then you check your motivation through the day. Is this what I'm, you know, is this what my motivation was for the day? Is this what I want in life? Is this what brings me meaning in life? And then, so it's like a constant refocusing, just like you're doing your meditation practice. And because during the day, if you don't watch your mind, if you're not vigilant of what you're doing and how you're doing it, then you are probably not aware of what you're doing. And you can very easily slip into forgetfulness and also unskillful actions. So motivation, unless we have a motivation, unless we have a reason for doing something, then we're not impelled to act at all. So the way to get a good motivation or intention is to see what the benefit of doing this action is. For example, one of the biggest motivating tests is your driver's license. No, everybody wants to pass the driver's license, whether it's the written test or the driving test. Everyone is extremely motivated to pass that test. Why? Because it gives you more freedom, more independence. You know, you can drop anything and go anywhere. You don't have to wait for the bus or the train or whatever or someone else to take you anywhere. That gives you independence, a better job, a better social life, and so on. So that's one of the, you know, tests or that has a great motivation. So that's what we have to do. We have to have that kind of motivation in our practice, in our meditation practice, and many of the things that we do during the day, because we know the benefits of what we want to do, of that session, the meditation practice, going to work, whatever you do during the day. So that's why we set our motivation. And then the dedication is to seal and direct our positive energy. And for example, at the end of the day, you might review what you did during the day and see whether what you did was what was your motivation or your intention that you set in the morning, where that matched that. And if it did, you can be very happy, satisfied, content that you had actually done that. And as far as the meditation practice, after you do your motivation, you calm your mind, you set your motivation, do the actual practice, it's not good to just jump up and just take off. You need to actually sit and recall the reasons why you did the practice, your motivation, and see if you actually fulfilled that, rather than just getting up and moving on to the next thing, you know, just satisfied that you have actually completed your meditation practice. So any questions or comments so far about all the things, the mindfulness eating or the motivation, dedication, laxity, excitement, any of that stuff? Anything? Okay, so now I'd like to talk about the benefits of meditation in our daily lives. So the purpose and power of meditation is to reduce afflictive mind. That's the reason we do the practice, not to just space out, not to just get calm and peaceful, you know, while you're sitting on the cushion. It's to actually get rid of forever the afflictive mind, the negative thoughts that pop up. Peace of mind doesn't happen when everything is smooth and perfect. It doesn't happen when something that we look forward to, when we're finished with our work, when we're tired. It happens in an imperfect world. So, you know, there are times when things are pretty even and even keel, and we want them to be that way, but then something always happens because that's where we live. We live among imperfect people in an imperfect world. There's going to be some really, you know, for example, some really bad flooding and maybe trees falling, power outages and so forth. You know, we didn't expect our weekend to be ruined, you know, but it's possible. So we can't just wait for everything to be smooth and perfect before we start this practice. So meditation teaches us to let go. You know, when we're in the meditation cushion, we're trying to focus on our breath, and then when thoughts and emotions pop up, or, you know, emotions such as the things that happened in the past or things that happened just a few minutes ago, it could be some of the thoughts, things that haven't even happened at all, our plans, our projects may pop up. But when they do, we just label them as a thought and we let it go. So that's what we do outside the meditation practice when we're off the cushion. We take care of, something happens or there are things that we have to do every day. We take care of our affairs. We do our best. And then we stop trying to control our world. And then it can't control you because it has no power over you. You just have dropped it. You let it go. So whatever it is, it can be loneliness, it can be cancer, it can be a bad relationship. You stop disturbing it. The loneliness is not you. The cancer is not you. The divorce is not you. It's just a label, just a thought. So just label it and let it go. And then you won't be controlled by it. And then you'll feel really calm and you'll feel peaceful because you're right here, right in the present moment, because most people can handle what's going on in this very moment most of the time, you know, unless they're in an accident, in extreme pain, something like that. You're in the present moment, then nothing should bother you. Maybe something you've been overwhelmed by some kind of bad relationship or something, but that person is not there. That person is not there with you right now. So that person can't control you. They have no power over you. So it's extracting the essence of life by concentration, by producing this peace of mind. So now I like to do a sharing activity where you break into groups or small groups, maybe just another person. And then if you would share any benefits that have happened to you since you started meditating. And then I'll sound the bell when it's time to get back together again, and hopefully some people will volunteer what they discussed in the group. Okay? So if you'll just split into small groups.
Yeah, for Thank you.
Okay. Would anyone like to share how any benefits that meditation has brought to their daily lives? Anyone? Well, as for me, I'll tell you, since no one wants to share. When I was separated and divorced, and I actually moved out, I was really, of course, I was very upset, but I was very fearful about how I was going to, you know, support my children, support ourselves. Because I had been only working part-time, and so I finally got a job, a full-time job, but his pay was very low. But it was in the department that I really wanted to work, you know, among friends, very wonderful people. They gave me a job. So I tried so many things. You know, first, after I finally got over, you know, adding up, you know, all my expenses and, you know, finding out how much money I needed and so forth. After I stopped doing that for a while, then I started looking around for any self-help thing that I could find. You know, I would go to the library because it was free. And you could, you know, find books. I read almost all Chicken of the Soup Soul books. You know, read all those and thought they were so wonderful. And then I didn't feel so bad. I tried math. I studied math one summer. I went to Outward Bound too. It was, you know, you go to them. That's later on. That's after I got a better job. Because that was expensive. But I tried many, many things to, you know, find some way, because I was not a happy camper, and my family, you know, they were all worried for me too. I think, you know, my poor children, my son and daughter, they were, you know, one was preteen, the other one was teenager. But it was very hard on them, I know that. But then one day I went to the library and I found a book on meditation. I forgot the name. Let's see. Name something. The Blooming of the Lotus by Thich Nhat Hanh. And then it had some guided meditations in there, because it's, you know, it's really hard to just sit and meditate. But this was, you know, you had what he would call maybe gathas. So you would say, like, breathing in, I know I'm breathing in, breathing out, I know I'm breathing out, and dwelling in a present moment, I know it's a wonderful moment, and things like that. And then later on, he actually came to the what is called it's Marbles Museum. It was Explorers then, and he was in the opening of that museum. And then I found a lay group that was meeting every Monday. They're still meeting there at the UFR on Wade Avenue on Monday nights. And then we practiced meditation, and it was just exactly what I needed. You know, even though at the beginning, you know, I couldn't keep my eyes slightly open. I had to close them. And then in like every minute, I had to hear the bell, because it would be out immediately. It would be gone. You know, after even 30 seconds, it would be gone. You know, I couldn't bring my mind back to my breath. So I had to actually hear, I bought a tape, and I could hear dwelling in a present moment. It's a, you know, beautiful moment. I had to hear that, and then he would hit the bell, and then it would just repeat like that. That was the only way I could actually meditate, because my mind was so excited. But then it was amazing, because almost immediately it was calm. You know, I was in the present moment. I wasn't worried about what might happen in the future. I wasn't thinking about, you know, anything about, you know, my husband or his new wife or anything. I was right there, and immediately it was calming. And I know it didn't last, you know, because it was just just that meditation. It wasn't the Dharma. So in other words, it was temporary. I had to learn more about the Buddhist teachings in order for it to really stick. for the calm and the peace to actually remain there, I had to know why. I had to learn things about, you know, like karma and cause and effect and so many other things. In other words, it couldn't just be just meditation, and it couldn't be just blind faith. It had to be, actual studies of the Buddhist teachings. And then that's when it would actually work much longer, and I didn't have to sit that much. That was like a few years later. But I sat and I meditated for a long time, for a few years, because it was just horrendous. You know, it took me like 10 years to get over my divorce. You know, it was just very shocking to my system. But that's my story. That's how meditation has really helped me a lot. And I do mostly these days, I do review meditation and analytical meditation. I don't do calm abiding that much anymore. I don't do concentration meditation because, you know, I can concentrate now. My mind isn't going everywhere. It's not lax. It's not excited. I can focus, you know, on, for example, I do the Lam Rim Chemo is the step-by-step instructions. It's a summary of the 84,000 teachings of the Buddha in a very step-by-step outline. And that's 39 pages long, and I memorized that. And it has to be like word for word. And so I just do that. I just go through that, and then it's very interesting because, you know, even if your mind is someplace else, it just rattles out whatever it is the next sentence is. You know, and then I think, oh, that's where I am. And then I go on. But I can do that, and I can do the analytical meditation, and in fact, I could be practicing, and then it'll just pop up. You know, like, I'm not saying that that's something wonderful. I'm just saying that, you know, intuitively it just comes up. Like, oh, you know, that's what he meant by impermanence. You know, that's what he meant by this topic or so forth. It's a normal thing that happens to anyone. But it's because you're sitting and you're meditating and you do these practices and you have this calm, you know, and peacefully it just comes to you. You know, after you studied it for a while and you're meditating on it, it comes to you after a while. Does anyone have any want to share anything? Okay. All right, so now I'd like to talk about visualization and meditation. So when you talk about visualization, there you have this idea that what you're doing is you're looking at you're thinking of a visual object. You know, you're thinking of visual images. You're working with your eyes. But that's not what is meant by that. And I'm going to repeat just what I read. It's from the Berzin Archives by Alexander Berzin. And what he said is that we're working with our imagination, not with like looking at a statue and trying to recall what it is. No, it's not like that at all. It's your imagination. So you imagine what you see, what you smell, what you feel, and hear, and so forth. It's all in your imagination. So you can just think like now, you might be tired. So you might be thinking of your bed. You can probably sit there and visualize the warmth of your bed and how comfortable it is. Or you might think of, you could probably visualize a nice bath or shower, you know, to relax you. You could probably sit there and just have no problem thinking of that, visualizing that. Or maybe if you're hungry, you could probably sit here and visualize your favorite meal or your favorite dessert. You could probably see it in your mind. You could probably smell the fragrance. You might even kind of even taste it. So that's what visualization is. So, okay, when you're visualizing, you know, you're thinking of an image. So say your meditation object is a flower. So you know, a flower. You just remember what a flower is. So you're just staring at the floor, thinking about the flower, and you imagine it at the level of your brow. You're looking at the floor, but you're imagining it right here. So I don't know if you want to try that. You just look down before you, and you're holding your hand at the level of your eyebrows. And so you're concentrating there on the floor, and you imagine your hand is there even though you're not seeing it. So that's what it is. That's what visualization is. You're imagining it there. And it's a familiar object. So that's what it is. That's all it is. So we can, you can use your imagination to try to overcome your disturbing emotions. Let's say you have an obsessive desire for an attractive person. You know, it could be a movie star or whatever. You're obsessed with it. Not just, you know, like it. Obsessed with it. So what you do is you imagine that person as a 90-year-old person. You imagine what they're going to look like when they're 90 years old. You know, you think they're so perfect now. And that's what obsession is. You think they'll never get old. They'll never get sick. You know, never change. They'll always be so handsome, so perfect, beautiful. You know, they won't wrinkle. They won't sag. They won't lose their teeth. Their hair won't get thin and gray, you know. And that's how you get rid of that's how you meditate on the obsession, to get rid of the obsession desire. Now to meditate on compassion. This is kind of sad, but Alexander Berzin suggests that you visualize a sheep going to the slaughterhouse, and then you imagine yourself as that sheep, and you think, you know, how horrible, you know, how sad that poor sheep is, you know, who wants desperately to be free. And you feel so much compassion for yourself, you know, the sheep going in there. And then you imagine like your mother, someone you really love, your mother, your spouse, your child, as that sheep and going into the slaughterhouse. And then that's one way of meditating and developing compassion. Because compassion is the wish that you are free of suffering. So now let's do the purification with light meditation. That's in handout number 10. So you sit in your on your comfortable concentration seat with your back straight, and you focus on your breath. And hopefully it's just natural, going in and out. And you set your motivation. As you exhale, imagine that all your negative energy, past mistakes, distorted conceptions, and disturbed emotions leave your body with the breath. Visualize all this negative energy as black smoke. Send it out into space, out of this room, out of this building, out into the sky where it disappears completely. Visualize this repeatedly. As you breathe out these negativities again and again, feel confident that you are gradually freeing yourself from all traces of negativities, faults, sickness, or delusions. So all these negativities are exhaled out as black smoke. As you inhale, imagine that all the positive energy in the universe enters your body with the breath in the form of pure, radiant, white light. Visualize this light flowing through your nostrils, down into your body, and into every part and corner of your body, pervading every cell, every atom, every organ. Your body gradually becomes clearer and clearer, lighter and lighter, more and more transparent. You feel more and more relaxed, light and blissful. Visualize this continuously, repeatedly, again and again. Continue to concentrate on this experience, breathing out the black smoke of your problems, illnesses, and negative energies, and breathing in the white light of purifying, blissful, good energy for the rest of this meditation session. When you are distracted by feelings or sensations or other input from the environment, simply observe these distractions without reacting or getting involved. Imagine that they too transform into black smoke and breathe them out into oblivion. I'd like to read a dedication from Shantideva's Guide to the Bodhisattva's Way of Life. And he refers to the awakening mind, and that is bodhicitta, the wish to attain enlightenment for the benefit of all sentient beings. May I be the doctor, the medicine, and may I be the nurse for all sick beings in the world until everyone is healed. May I become an inexhaustible treasure for those who are poor and destitute. May I turn into all things they could need and be placed close beside them. May I be a protector for those without one, a guide for all travelers on the way. May I be a bridge, a boat, and a ship for all who wish to cross the water. May I be a wish-granting jewel, a magic vase, powerful mantras, and great medicine. May I become a wish-fulfilling tree and a cow of plenty for the world. Just like a blind man discovering a jewel in a heap of rubbish, likewise, by some coincidence, an awakening mind has been born within me. It is the supreme ambrosia that overcomes the sovereignty of death. It is the inexhaustible treasure that eliminates all poverty in the world. Thus, by the virtue collected through all that I have done, may the pain of every living creature be completely cleared away. So for our homework, if you will, you know, engage in your daily meditation practice, calming the mind, you know, with your motivation, then the actual meditation practice, and then your dedication, and practice that light purification with light meditation. And then next week is our last class. So if you have been coming and doing all those meditations, you please bring your completion card, and we'll do a review of the main topics that were discussed. Thank you. Thank you very much. Have a safe week.